Now follow some very difficult symbols of the Upanishad. Literally, they cannot be easily grasped. Even the Sanskrit is not classical, it is highly archaic. It is a Vedic language of Sanskrit. And the idea conveyed through this most difficult style is still more difficult. So that one cannot easily make out the sense of what the passages, unless you deeply think over the words as well as the meanings that are hidden between the lines, as it were. An unphilosophical mind may not be able to understand the hidden meaning of the symbols. Perhaps it is the case with all symbols. They can't be understood literally. The whole symbolic description here is one of the process of creation, how things come. And what is it that we see with our eyes? Where are we living? What is the connection between the effect and the cause? What is our connection with the universal being? What is the relationship between the individual and the absolute? All these points are discussed in a pithy and pointed way in a few passages, commencing from the Brahmana or the section of the Upanishad that we are commencing just now. Naiveha kinchanagra asit. Originally there was nothing. Mrityune vedam avratam asit. Death was enveloping everything. That is all the meaning literally of this sentence. In the beginning of things, what was there? Nothing was there. There was a devouring, all-consuming death principle, as it were. Nothing else we could conceive. In the Veda, also there is this very same point reflected in the Nasadiya Sutta. Asididam tamo bhutam aprajnatam alakshanam apratarkyam avijneyam prasuptam iva sarvata, says the Manuspruti in the very beginning of the first chapter. What was there originally? Darkness enveloped, as it were, because there was not the light of sensory perception. What we call light is nothing but the capacity of the senses to perceive. When the senses cannot perceive, we say there is no light. In pitch darkness, a kind of light exists, but the eyes are incapable of catching the ray of light. That frequency is quite different from the one that is necessary for the eyes to perceive. So, when there was no possibility of external consciousness, when there was no sensory activity, when there was no distinction between the subject and the object, when the seer was not distinguishable from the seen, what was there? You can imagine for yourself what can be there. If you are not to perceive anything outside, what would be your condition? You cannot imagine it because such a condition has never been seen. But it would be a veritable abolition and obliteration of all consciousness. Because any kind of consciousness is equivalent in our case with externality. Therefore, in the condition of non-objectivity, which is the origin of things, cosmic beginning of things, where the distinction between the seer and the seen was not marked properly, where one commingled with the other, when one entered the other, where the two could not be distinguished for reasons obvious, what was there? Nothing was there. Naiveha kinchan agra asit. Originally, nothing was there because our idea of something is an object. There was no object present because the object entered the subject and vice versa. What was there then? If nothing was there, could you tell me that it is capable of definition in some way? Mrityu naivedam agra asit, avratam asit. Ashanayaya hi mrityuhu. The devouring death principle is the element of hunger which grasps objects. Here hunger does not mean merely the appetite for edible dishes like rice, barley, etc. It is a metaphysical principle. The hunger is a cosmic element. It is not an individual operation of the biological spleen or the liver or the stomach of the individual. What is here intended is the principle of grasping the object can be regarded as the hunger of the soul or the individual. There was nothing except the desire to grasp the object. If at all you could say that anything was there. Ashanaya is the hunger of the individual to grasp, absorb, contact, abolish, devour the object. Now, this is a condition which cannot be easily analyzed unless we pose for a while on this subject and visualize what actually is in the mind of the author of the Upanishad. How diversity arose? How could there be a development of the distinction between the seer and the seen from that chaotic, nebular condition of universal darkness and the cosmic waters? That condition which is not of the absolute, but what sometimes is described in the Puranas, in the epics and religious parlance, is the precondition of the manifestation of the external universe. It is difficult to imagine this condition because we cannot understand what could be the precondition of the manifestation of externality, which is what we call creation. Creation is nothing but the projection of externality in the indivisibility. The creation of the universe, therefore, is not actually the manufacture of a new substance. This is a great point which will be explained in greater detail further as we proceed. In creation, a new thing is not created because nothing can come from nothing. If a new thing is to be created, it must have been produced out of nothing. How can nothing produce something? It is illogical. It must have existed in some causal state. This causal state is the substance of the universe. Now what is actually the distinctive mark of the universe that is created as different from the original causal condition? In what way does the effect get differentiated from the cause? If everything that is in the effect is in the cause, what is the distinctive feature? What is the distinguishing mark which separates the effect from the cause? If the effect is entirely different from the cause, you cannot posit a cause at all because the cause is non-existent. If the cause is non-existent, the effect also will be non-existent. So the cause must have contained the effect in a primordial state. And therefore nothing can be visualized in the effect which could not have been in the cause. In a sense, therefore, what is in the effect is what is in the cause. The effect is the cause. There is no non-distinction between the effect and the cause, inasmuch as in substance they are the same. But yet we make a distinction between the two. This peculiarity, visheshata, which characterizes the distinction between the cause and the effect is the principle of what we call space-time. In modern philosophical language, if you would like to put it. But otherwise, it is the principle of externality. The principle of externality is not a substance. It is a peculiar state of consciousness. That is the distinguishing principle. The effect gets isolated from the cause by a peculiar adjustment of consciousness within the cause, not necessarily involving change or modification of the cause, but only a state of mind or consciousness. Now, when the effect thus psychologically gets isolated from the cause, there is the seed sown for the further diversity of creation. The 2 becomes 4, 4 becomes 8, 8 becomes 16, and multiplicity thus proceeds from the original singular atom of the cosmos. And when this diversity, which is creation, is conceived as possible and capable of being hiddenly present in the cause, we have to assume also a peculiar potency in the cause, which becomes the reason behind the manifestation of diversity. This is called the Shakti in certain philosophies, the force, energy that is present in consciousness. A peculiar, indistinguishable, indescribable, eluding something, without the assumption of which creation cannot be assumed. And sometimes people call it Maya merely because they can't understand what it is. It is not a substance that exists. It is an inability to grasp the meaning of it. That is all. Now, this peculiarity, whatever you may call it, whatever designation may be applied to it, is the cause of the distinction of the effect from the cause, and that becomes the first breeding ground for the further multifarious divisions we see in the form of this vast creation. The moment this creation begins, moment there is the potency released for the external expression of what was hiddenly present in the cause, there is a catastrophic change taking place. And this is the urge for creation, the urge for diversity, multiplicity, and what not, color, sound, activity, etc. This characteristic of self-division is called Mrityu, death principle, that which destroys the indivisible, that which isolates the one from the other, that which disfigures the original condition of things, the destroyer of the original state of affairs. That is symbolically called death here, and further it is described as the hunger of things to grab other objects. Now, what is this hunger mentioned here, Ashanaya, Mrityu? It is the urge that is simultaneously present in the process of creation for an involution of things. When there is a separation of one thing from another in creation, the seer becomes distinguished from the seen, the subject is separated from the object, they struggle to become one, because that which is separated as hiddenly present in itself the capacity to unite also, because the two are nothing but the substance of the one. So the indivisibility of the one presses itself forward even in the divisibility of the two. So there is restlessness everywhere. Our sorrows, our difficulties, our problems, our griefs, and every kind of unwanted thing here is a tussle between two elements in our soul. the urge for diversity and the urge for unity fighting with one another. This struggle is samsara, right from the original creator Brahma up to the blade of grass. This asanaya, the hunger of the spirit, is the activity of the cosmos, where on one side it struggles to become more and more wide in its physical quantitative expanse, and on the other side struggles to become one with the universal spirit. So we have two elements present within us always, the tendency to unity and the tendency to diversity. We ask for expansion in quantity, and at the same time we ask for a heightening of our value in quality. However, the Upanishad here mentions in a very difficult word that the origin of creation is indescribable, and it is indescribable merely because it preceded a state which requires the presence of effect in the cause, and which was also preceded by a state which has within it invisibly present the capacity to multiply and also the capacity to unite. Manaha Akuruta, the mind of the cosmos, which is called the cosmic mind in usual parlance, is regarded here as an evolute and not the original being. The absolute is transcendent being. It is not a mind thinking. It is not even a causal state. Even the causal state is supposed to be posterior to the absolute. We never associate the absolute with the world. The Brahman of the Upanishad or the absolute of philosophy is an assertion of a being which is unrelated to creation. And when we have to associate God with creation, we have a new word altogether for it. Ishvara is the word we use in ordinary language of Vedanta. Such words are not in the Upanishads. They are all to be found in later Vedanta, but they are assumed here. In the Sankhya and the Vedanta cosmological descriptions, we have certain grades mentioned of the coming out of the effect from the cause. Before we go further into the difficulties envisaged in these passages of the Upanishad, it is better we understand a little bit of the evolutionary principles as enunciated in the Sankhya and the Vedanta. The Sankhya tells us that there was an original condition where everything was potent, though not patent. Everything was hidden, though not expressed. Everything was in a universal causal state. That is regarded as the non-existent, dark, undeveloped, indivisible state of things. That is called Prakriti in the Sankhya language. Those of you who have studied Sankhya philosophy will know what is Prakriti and how evolutes proceed, come out from this Prakriti. Prakriti is only a Sanskrit term for the matrix of all things. The original state where everything is in a mass, where one thing cannot be distinguished from the other. What astronomers would call the nebular dust in some way. But this is something more than that. It is a cosmic dust, you may call it. Everything is contained there. And everything is hidden. Everything is undeveloped and indistinguishable, incapable of being perceived, because even sense organs were not developed there. Then there is a tendency to think. The cosmic thought develops itself. That is what is indicated here by the word tanmanaha akuruta. From this undeveloped being which was equivalent to a universal darkness, mind arose. That mind is the cosmic mind. In the Sankhya we call it Mahat, and in the Vedanta we call it Hiranyagarbha. This cosmic undeveloped state is sometimes called the Ishvara. Now, Ishvara is not undeveloped in the sense of a primitive state where intelligence is absent, but it is an exceedingly intelligent condition where distinctions were not present. We call it symbolically dark because the light of the senses will not operate there. It is a light that was transcendent, and in the passages occurring in such works as the Manusmriti, we are told that it was shining as brightly as thousands of suns. Sahasram Shadama Prabham. How can you call it darkness? But it was darkness to the eyes which were not developed. Just as the blaze of the sun may be darkness when it is very intense. So, the mind that is supposed to be the evolute immediately proceeding from the undeveloped condition is the Hiranyagarbha principle of the Vedanta coming from the Ishvara principle or Mahat coming from Prakriti. Then there is Ahankara Tattva proceeding from Mahat, the self-sense of the cosmos. This is how the Sankhya would describe the development of the original cosmic eye-sense from the cosmic intelligence, which again is an evolute of the cosmic Prakriti. Then there is the distinction between the subject and the object. On one side there is the physical universe and on the other side there are the individuals. The physical universe is constituted of the tanmatra, shabda, sparsha, rupa, rasa, gandha, which become concretized by a process called quintuplication into the five elements. Earth, water, fire, air and ether. And subjectively they become the individual with the five koshas, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya koshas. These koshas are the vestures of the individual soul. The physical, the vital, the mental, the intellectual and the causal bodies. These are called the five koshas, annamaya, pranamaya, manomaya, vijnanamaya, anandamaya. And within these koshas we have the pranas, the senses, the senses of perception and action, and the mind, the ego, the subconscious and unconscious, and the intellect, and ultimately a very unintelligible substance within us which we experience in deep sleep, that is the causal state. So this is how the Sankhya would describe the process of creation, which is followed literally to some extent in the Vedanta also, with only a distinction in definition. Instead of the terms Prakriti, Mahat, Ahankara, we have the terms Virat, Hiranyagarbha, Ishvara. So this cosmological process, the development of the effect from the cause gradually from the universal being down to the lowest of diverse elements, this it is that is described here in this Brahmana, which says originally nothing was. From there the element of distinction between the subject and the object, characterized by a double activity of grasping and separation, was evolved, and then arose the cosmic mind Hiranyagarbha. Hari Om Tat Sat.